Welcome to Inside Education, your weekly guide to education matters in Ireland and further afield, brought to you by me, Sean Delaney. You can listen to or download podcasts of previous programmes on seandelaney.com/podcasts. This week, I bring you the second part of my interview with Dr. Michael Flannery from the Merino Institute of Education. Michael Flannery directs the new master's course in visual arts education offered by the Institute, which is accredited by Trinity College Dublin. Michael Flannery is a qualified primary school teacher, and he has been working as a teacher educator in the visual arts for almost two decades. His research interests include visual arts inquiry, imagination and creativity, integrated arts and visual arts integration, as well as creative technologies and visual arts. On last week's programme, we talked about starting points for visual arts lessons, what it means to be good at art, and how the visual arts might be used to mark special occasions in the annual school calendar. This week, I began by asking Michael Flannery about the artists whose work he most enjoys.
Over the years, as I've encountered more and more artists, that the list just keeps growing and growing and growing. But I do probably find, I remember I was involved in online summer course design for a period of about 4 or 5 years. And I remember one criticism of the spectrum of artwork that I showed, they said that I showed an awful lot of contemporary work to the neglect of maybe more traditional forms. But I think the reason behind that is that one of the aims of my course at the time was to expose teachers maybe to mean lesser known artists, because I felt that they had prior knowledge than about more traditional kind of art forms. But I probably lean towards artists that explore the elements of art maybe as opposed to maybe topics or themes. So like there's an artist called Yabi Kusama, and I like her for various reasons. She's Japanese, she's well in her 80s, she was gifted with compulsive obsessive disorder, and they say that she was able to manage this disorder then through her artwork. So her artwork is absolutely amazing in terms of pattern, colour, vibrancy. The eye is a motif in her work, so I find that it really appeals to children and appeals to anybody that I've introduced her work to. Her artwork has permeated many industries such as fashion, industrial design, so she's kind of like the Orla Kiley of Japan, and worldwide she's recognised. I love Andy Goldsworthy because he's an environmental artist. He's out there working out in situ. His sculptural work is delicate, it's transient. He works with snow and ice and leaves and water. And I think his work really appeals to children's sensibilities as well. So his work is in situ. So he dispels the notion that artwork has to be exhibited within a gallery space. It can be actually out in a very quiet place in the middle of a wood where nobody encounters it, but he takes a photograph of it. And like I say, it disappears maybe after a day or two. I love work by Julian Opie because he explores technology. His work incorporates animation and film. He has abstracted the complexity, say for example, of a face, and he's made it in a very pure form using simple line and then block colour. I love the work of David Hockney because he revisits a particular landscape time and time again through, you know, for every season. And also he uses multiple canvases instead of one canvas to depict a landscape. He's embraced the iPad to create wonderful landscapes and still lifes and portraits using the iPad technology, and it's blown up very large scale within the gallery setting. I like Irish artists. I like Patrick Scott and Sean Scully and William Leach. And like different artists for different reasons. Wayne Thiebaud is an artist that I often introduce to children because he's got these delicious pink colours, and the still lifes that he chews then have to do with ice cream and sherbet and lipsticks and shoes and things that really appeal to children. And his landscapes are wonderful as well in terms of incorporating pastel colours. Another artist that I really like and I introduced to our students is called Leonora Carrington. Leonora Carrington is known as the Celtic Surrealist, and we actually have a very exciting project that we do with our third year students based on Leonora Carrington. She explores the surreal world, the world of hybrid animals. She has a lot of Celtic motifs and lots of symbols within her work, such as golden eggs. So there's all sorts of rich sort of symbolism within her work. But our students are challenged to create what we call an art cloth that illustrates on one hand all of the drawing, print, paint and colour and fabric and fibre techniques for the junior classes, but they are to illustrate them in a manner that is complex, and evidences their capacity to create and to work with those techniques, inspired by Leonora Carrington. And this art cloth, the content of it, that will contain various motifs and landscapes and surrealscapes, they have to use it as a resource for a drama lesson. So it is an integrated arts lesson with our BEd 3 cohort, and they do wonderful work each year. So I use different artists for different reasons, and I like different artists for different reasons as well.
Do you have to be good at art yourself in order to be good at teaching it?
Well, first of all, I feel that, just like I said earlier in my interview, that I didn't find my sport maybe in primary education, but eventually I think you do find a sport that you can enjoy. And the same thing with visual art. I would say that everybody has the capacity to create and to make, but perhaps they don't persist with it enough. They become a little bit impatient. To be good at any kind of instrument, you have to practice it. To be good at any sport, you have to practice it. So it's the same with visual art. So I would say that everybody has within them the capacity to create and make with a particular art form, with good and very good outcomes. But as a generalist practitioner, or as a primary school teacher, the curriculum doesn't say that you have to be an expert in your field. You have to, I suppose, be enthusiastic about it and be enthusiastic about teaching and sharing what you know about visual art with children. So I would say that the role of initial teacher education is to develop within their student teachers a positive disposition towards visual arts, to appreciate the necessity of visual arts in children's lives and in all of our lives, to be confident and competent to be able to demonstrate basic techniques across the strands, to have a repertoire of artists that they are happy to show and talk about, to have the confidence maybe to organise a field excursion to a gallery or to a local sculpture, or to take children out and to appreciate the visual elements in their everyday lives. So I would say that there is basic foundation subject knowledge that teachers need to acquire, but the curriculum is very much designed around the generalist practitioner, as is PE or music or drama or any other subject.
So you wouldn't be advocating for specialist art educators in schools?
No, I think there is a role for specialists. I think everybody can learn. And actually, that I think there is a role, and I think schools should experience artists in residence as much as apply for them. There is always parents within schools that are practicing artists, practicing architects, practicing craftspeople, who could be welcomed into the school to work alongside the primary school teachers. So I would say the ideal scenario would be for the combination of the generalists, but also to welcome in specialists, teaching artists or curriculum specialists, but in the field then to work so that they can hone and improve their practice.
As part of your work in teacher education, you teach a course called C3I. What is that course?
Yes, well, actually, as a consequence of the reconfigured Bachelor of Education degree then a number of years ago, a few lecturers got together and we engaged in blue sky thinking about what would we like to incorporate into the programme. And one of the things we said is that we would like imagination to be taken a little more seriously. And so as a consequence of that, then we decided that we created a module that is designed around taking imagination a little more seriously in planning, in teaching and assessment. We also we explored integration. There's mixed quality practices of integration out there.
This is cross-curricular work.
Exactly, cross-curricular work. And unfortunately, often the arts are used as a methodology for learning only when it comes to integrated planning and teaching. So we would like to unpack different types of integration and different ways of integration, and also ways and means of quality assuring that whatever integration happens, that it's of good quality. And the third I of C3I, I should have said, one is imagination, the second is integration, the third is innovation. What we felt was is that the world of business and industry have taken ownership over the word innovation. And we felt really that innovation should reside and should be part and should be a descriptor of any classroom practice. So part of the module looks at how teachers can and should examine their practice in terms of innovation. And really what we mean by innovation is it could be strategies, resources, the use of technology, classroom design, looking at all of these in terms of coming up with something original and innovative and something that benefits the classroom and that they can share with other teachers.
So what kind of things do they do then? Could you give us an example of an activity you might do as part of the class?
One part of it is looking at different types of integration, looking at why we integrate and why is it important that we integrate and what are the limitations of integration and what are the dangers of integration. And as a consequence of that, the students would plan together and cooperatively in terms of choosing a topic and deciding what subjects would be best used to explore different aspects of that particular topic.
And such as, what might the topic be?
I'm just trying to think, I'm going back to maybe a School Links project where we were asked last year, and we're doing an exhibition for Bloom this year, but we were asked last year to explore the theme of the butterfly for Bloom. And I was working with second class children at the time. So we decided that if we were to integrate visual arts with SESE to unpack learning about the butterfly, what is it that visual arts could teach children about the butterfly that maybe SESE couldn't do so well?
The social, environmental and scientific education.
Exactly. So we decided, well, the first thing is, if I recall correctly, butterflies have a particular type of vision that is different to ours. And they have 6,000 lenses in each of their eyes. And so when they are looking at the world, they can see little snippets of the world through each of these little lenses. So what we decided to do was we arranged the children in two distinct groups, and we arranged them at different heights of levels, standing, sitting and kneeling, and we got them to focus outside on a particular element, a particular component of the landscape, and to do a little observational drawing of that. And then we put them together so that they could actually see how the butterfly views the world that is different to the way they view the world. The second thing we explored was symmetry and pattern. So we did a lot of work on exploring symmetry and pattern, which is synonymous with the butterfly. And the other thing that we decided to do was we decided to explore large-scale work, whereby we were trying to do a little calculation as to how large would our wings have to be if we were to fly like a butterfly. So we kind of did the average height of the child, and we did a little bit of research of how large the wings should be. And so we did a visual arts kind of project, creating wings as large as they would be in order for them to be able to fly. Little things like that. So we were just exploring aspects of the topic butterfly that maybe would not be addressed as well within the area of SESE.
You've mentioned the term school links a few times.
Yes.
You often bring primary school children into the art room here in Marino. What kind of projects do you work on with them?
Well, it's really important. School Links is something that Marino has funded for the last couple of years. They've given me a small little bursary then to link with schools. And it's so important to do so because ultimately it grounds your practice. So over the years then, I haven't been teaching as much in primary school. So while our student teachers go out into primary schools, it affords me the opportunity to make connections with local primary schools and invite the children in. And we would work alongside the teachers and work alongside the children. And we would explore topics and themes in negotiation with the teachers. And what's lovely about that is when the student teachers return, we're able to showcase some of the work that we've done. But more importantly, we're able to share the points for further development and the mistakes that were made and the learning that was derived from it as a consequence of that experience. The School Links is important also in terms of our strategic goals. Marino Institute of Education, one of our strategic goals is links and partnerships with local school communities. So visual arts is a lovely way of making connections with local schools, but often then our projects will link in with other subject areas. So this year we decided to explore musicality and art and visuality of music, but also we took on the theme of creative recycling. So we had a project which we titled Ecosonic Playground Instruments, whereby children were afforded the opportunity to make musical instruments using recycled materials which were explored in SESE. And then they were explored even more in terms of composing and performing in music. And then we did visual responses to their compositions in visual arts. So just really, really interesting work. It allows us to experiment and to try things out as well. And alongside every School Links project, we have a research component which allows us then to get feedback from teachers and from children and to look at their work and to research it and then to present papers on it at conferences and to learn from the whole experience.
One of the reasons we're talking is because you're putting on a new master's course next year in visual arts. What will that course be about?
You mentioned earlier on, I think, about the generalist versus specialist sort of scenario. And here, I suppose, is an opportunity for any practicing primary school teacher who is interested in becoming a specialist. In every school, I think there are go-to people for various subject areas. We know of somebody that we would go to if we wanted some information about maybe English literature, or somebody to contact in terms of SESE or maths. And in every school, there is probably somebody whose practice is really shaded, shall we say, then by visual arts. And you can see it very tangibly, maybe in terms of their displays or their enthusiasm for artwork. So this really is an opportunity for primary school teachers who are interested in improving their practice or quality assuring their practice or becoming maybe the go-to person for visual arts within their school, to become what we might call maybe a generous expert or a curriculum specialist. The whole idea of the programme is to unpack different type of arts and education practices in terms of their strengths, their leanings, their emphases, to unpack the visual arts curriculum, to expand their repertoire of techniques, their knowledge of the world of art, also how to plan long-term and short-term for visual arts, and to be an advocate, I suppose, for visual arts in the school so that they have the confidence to maybe approach the Arts Council for an artist in residence to make contact, like I say, with the parent body who might have, various parents might have expertise within the visual arts, and to know how to incorporate them into the school community then so they can enrich the visual arts class and practice. So the course structure really, it's orientated around five modules. One is a general core education module. The last module is a research-based module where they conduct some research and produce a dissertation based on a particular question that they would like to answer pertaining to visual arts. And sandwiched between those two modules are three visual arts specialism modules, which have both a theoretical and a practical component. And the practical components would concern the various strands of visual arts, but also other ones including graphic design and digital media and contemporary art forms. And alongside that, we would look at what we would call maybe the 10 I's, which includes ideology, inspiration, ideation, integration, interdisciplinarity, inquiry, inclusion, ICT and innovation, all of the things then that help to form a vibrant visual arts practice within a school.
And is it aimed just at primary teachers, or would other educators or other people be interested in it?
Exactly. I mean, visual arts grows from the early years right up into third level. So anybody working in early years or further ed or second level, or if there's artists who are interested to become teaching artists, essentially. Now, the outcome from it is a Master's in Education Studies in Visual Arts, so it is not a teaching qualification per se, but the course will certainly equip them with foundation knowledge to be able to plan and to be able to work alongside a teacher and to be able to teach and evaluate and assess a programme of experiences that are quality rich from an arts education perspective.
And how hands-on will the course be? Like, will it be all reading, or will it be all making art, or is it going to be a combination?
Well, the course is structured around weekends. We have Friday evenings and Saturdays, and I would say it is easily a 50-50 relationship between 50 in terms of studio work. And often, again, the power of visual art is that often we can unpack some constructs pertaining to theory through physical making. Like constructionism is an approach to learning which is all about making to understand abstract constructs. So at the end of each particular module, the participants will probably curate an exhibition that will actually unpack particular constructs pertaining to particular aspects of theory concerning visual arts. So the practical is a key component then to the course.
And why is such a course necessary?
I feel it's necessary that within every school community, we do have what I would call curriculum specialists that can help teachers, that can be motivating, that can be encouraging to other teachers who are not as confident within that particular field. I also think that there's a lot of policy being generated by various arts education agencies, the Department of Education and Skills. And I think that it's important that teachers have the confidence to communicate their voice and their perspective on things and be part of policy formation and policy policy implementation as well. And I think that it is good for teachers to critique their practice and not to take for granted that their practice is going well. I think it affords people who are interested in the arts to actually stand back and to appraise their practice in its strengths, but also in terms of points of further development in light of recent research and in light of how visual arts is changing.
And it's a Trinity degree that people get after the 2 years.
Yes, that's right. And this particular master programme complements current provision from Trinity with respect to drama and music. So it really does complement current provision from a Trinity perspective. It's part of a broader menu of master's programmes that MAE is providing with respect to early childhood education, inquiry-based learning and inclusive education. So we have quite a variety of master's programmes, so it's part of that as well.
And if someone wants to find out more about the course, how can they go about it?
Well, I suppose the easiest way would be to contact contact us by, you'll see the information on the website. If you actually
MIE.ie.
If you actually Google search visual arts MIE, you will come straight to the page as well. I also have a small little Instagram account, which is visartsmie, and there is a QR code that will send you then to the website as well.
And your email address is
michael.flannery@mie.ie.
We're coming near the end, Michael, so I have a few general questions I wanted to ask you. Who or what inspires you?
We conversed earlier on about artists that inspire me. I suppose who else inspires me would be other theorists or other researchers or other educators that are synonymous with creativity, imagination and integration. So I'm just to name some just offhand would be like Csikszentmihalyi or Hickman or Kraft. Barnes is another person then that associated them with cross-curricular planning. So I think there's loads that do inspire me from different places and spaces. Following my PhD, I completed another Master's in Technology and Learning in Trinity. And I found that there are other theorists and educators from technology that also inspire my work. And Papert, Seymour Papert, then, who's associated with constructionism, informs my practice as well.
Have you a favourite book or blog or writer about education?
In terms of practical artwork, there's a lovely book which really explores long-term planning then for maybe the more senior classes from ages 7 to 11. It's called Teaching Art 7 to 11 by Nigel Meagher, M-E-A-G-E-R. And just in terms of maybe a rationale for the necessity of visual arts in primary education, there's this lovely book called Why Our Schools Need the Arts. And Jessica Hoffman Davis, she puts up lovely arguments as to why the visual arts is necessary. Just in terms of broadening your understanding of the nature of visual art, there's a lovely book here that I came across, which is called Unexpected Art by Spring, Hoffman and Frock. And it has really exciting kind of large scale work that will really appeal to children's sensibilities. Just not to neglect Irish artists, there's a lovely book by Bratnott Lynch called 50 Works of Irish Art, which is a lovely book to look through and to flick through and to really appreciate the diversity of artwork that is part and parcel of Irish culture. Just in terms of theory, Elliot Eisner is synonymous in terms of his advocacy for the arts, and he has a lovely publication called The Arts and the Creation of Mind. And I would have to acknowledge my own supervisor for my PhD, which I did a number of years ago, Professor Gary Granville, has a book called Art Education and Contemporary Culture, which contains a series of articles pertaining to the Irish context specifically.
There's quite a selection there for people to choose from. If you could make one change to your current school and resources were not an issue, what change would you make?
Do you mean in relation to my practice or primary classroom practice?
I mean, either, but I mean, even your current practice as a teacher educator.
The one thing that I would probably say is slow things down a little bit. And I think this is part and parcel of primary education as well, that often the practice of visual art then is to produce a product very quickly. So at the end of a lesson, you've got a product which you'll put on display. And the one thing that I have learned then over the years is that I want to slow down a little bit more and to allow students to engage in a piece of work maybe over 1 or 2 weeks that culminates in a product. Now you may ask, well, what would you do, for example, after week one and week two if you don't have a product? But there is no rule to say, for example, that you cannot display a work in progress. And beside it, write a little creative process description for the viewer in terms of what was the stimulus for work, what was the creative decisions that have been taken so far. It also affords the opportunity for children and for students to look at their work from a distance. And nearly unconsciously, they're sort of making decisions about what they're going to go next. And it allows media to dry so you can do kind of exciting things such as overprinting or overpainting or embellishing. So one thing I would say is to slow down the amount of product that is being produced and maybe to make a more concerted effort to have maybe more long-term projects that culminates in a product maybe after 2 or 3 weeks. So that's one thing that I would like to do myself, and it's something that I would like to see in schools. The other thing that I would probably encourage is for people to become a more discerning integrationist. And what I mean by that is that the arts are very generous and they're a very easy go-to subject when it comes to integration. But really just to ask yourself the question, if I'm going to integrate an art subject into a particular theme, why am I doing it? And if I am doing it, to be sure that through this process of integration that you're also furthering skills and concepts and language pertaining to visual arts as you are integrating. So in other words, you're not just furthering the other subject area, but you're ensuring that there is teaching and learning happening within in visual arts as a consequence of that integration. And the third thing I'd probably say as well is that is to spend a little bit more time maybe looking and responding that is currently practiced in schools. I think the research indicates that while the curriculum is much loved, there probably is excessive amount of time on the making to the neglect of maybe looking and responding to children's own work, work by other children and work by other particular artists. And like I've mentioned earlier on, in order to become a better writer, you need to read. So in order to become a better artist, you have to be able to look and discuss and talk and appraise and steal ideas then from other works of art.
And if you go back to the point you made about slowing things down a bit, when you say working on a piece of art over 3 weeks, or a number of weeks, are you talking about working on one piece of art, or are you thinking of, you know, maybe making drafts that ultimately are disposed of and then you work on the final one?
Well, you could take the two approaches, but I suppose I'm thinking of really whereby you might decide that you're focusing on drawing on week one. And then in week two, you might decide to do a little bit of overpainting. You're doing a little bit of overpainting, a little bit of a color wash or something. And then in week three, you might decide to do a little bit of overprinting. And like each layer will add another dimension to it. Now, the other approach could be, Sean, whereby you take a particular topic, such as I mentioned earlier on, which was the pineapple, and you decide then that you're going to explore it from a construction point of view. You revisit the same stimulus and then you explore it again from a printmaking point of view, and then you revisit again then from a drawing point of view. But because they're going back to that stimulus each time, they're actually improving in terms of their capacity to actually perceive and see the detail in it, and it enhances ultimately their week three work. So I would say yes, just instead of putting the pressure on children and the pressure on yourself to actually window dress your corridor every single week with product, do the opposite. Spend a little bit more time. You can imagine yourself, if you spend, say, 30 minutes on a particular piece of work, imagine like how it could be enriched and embellished if you spend maybe 50 minutes on that piece of work. But of course, it does depend on the age and stage of the child as well. You know, that you'll probably be a little more difficult for younger children to spend as much time on the one particular piece, because they consider their piece finished maybe after a couple of minutes. And that's legitimate and that's fine, and you move on to the next. But it could be exploring a different concept of that theme.
The benefits of spending more time on specific projects in the visual arts, outlined there by Michael Flannery, bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. Dr. Michael Flannery is the course director for the new master's course in visual arts education offered by the Marino Institute of Education and accredited by Trinity College Dublin. My own book, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available for purchase online, or you can ask your local library to order it. You can listen to hundreds of podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.